Following are comments on Shakespeare's Henry V, Chorus and Act 5, plus epilogue. So let him land and solemnly see him set on to London. The chorus speaker pictures the return home of Henry and his victorious army. The Holy Roman Emperor visits to try to make permanent peace, but that effort fails, and Henry again returns to France. In the chorus for Act 5, the speaker sets the current year as 1421. After the 1415 invasion of France, Henry had invaded again in 1417, and his English forces captured Rouen by a siege. And they also captured Caen, spelled C-A-E-N, and Normandy. Later in 1421, after the Treaty of Troyes that granted him marriage to Catherine of Valois, and the status of heir to the French throne, King Henry V returned to France and laid a hard-fought siege to Meaux, spelled M-E-A-U-X, for its strategic importance in controlling France. This was after a serious defeat at Beaugay and a personal trip to Paris to refurbish his image in France. However, Henry died of dysentery in France at the end of August 1422, and Charles VI followed him to the grave in October of the same year. The Treaty of Amiens was to follow in 1423. But the troubled reign of Henry V's son, Henry VI, who reigned from 1422 to 1461, and then briefly in 1470 and 1471, saw the loss of almost all of the territory that his father had spent so much effort to win, and the reign of Charles VII as King of France from 1422 to 1461. The same years saw the reign of Henry VI and the beginning in England of the Wars of the Roses from 1455 to 1487 between the great houses of Lancaster and York. From there, it's on to the reign of the Tudors, beginning with Henry VII in 1485 and ending with Elizabeth I, who reigned from 1558 through 1603. At the outset of the choral speech, we see the people of London and their dignitaries go out to meet King Henry V, as if he were a, quote-unquote, conquering Caesar. Act 5, Chorus, line 28, quote-unquote, "So let him land and solemnly see him set on to London," says the chorus speaker. Chorus 5, lines 13 through 14. There's even a reference to the future Queen Elizabeth I's sometime favorite and soon-to-be treasonous enemy, the Earl of Essex, who around the time of the play's writing in 1599 was expected back shortly from a campaign fighting against Irish rebels. The return described would be Henry's initial trip home from the Agincourt campaign in November 1415. Holy Roman Emperor Sigismund, who reigned as Holy Roman Emperor from 1433 to 1437, did not succeed in his diplomatic efforts to bring France and England together, and he eventually sided with England, as the 1416 Treaty of Canterbury demonstrates. In any event, the chorus speaker says, more time has passed, and now it's, quote-unquote, straight back again to France. Chorus 5, line 46. "To England will I steal, and there I'll steal." Llewellyn humiliates Pistol with Welsh leeks. Pistol will return home to England, steal for a living, and lie about his exploits. In Act 5, Scene 1, Llewellyn and Pistol are at odds over St. David's Day, the day of homage to Wales's 6th century Common Era patron St. David. Legend has it that 7th century Common Era King Cadwallader ordered his men to wear leeks during a battle with the Saxons, post 5th century Germanic invaders of England. Anyhow, Pistol has insulted Llewellyn about his Welsh heritage, and Llewellyn forces him to chomp down some of the Welsh vegetable Pistol mocked. Act 5, Scene 1, lines 29 through 53 inclusive. Pistol is humiliated, and worse yet, he informs us, his wife, Nell Quickly, the hostess, is dead. Nell is dead, that is, if Pistol's use of the name Doll refers to Mistress Quickly and not to Doll Tearsheet. Still, he is not quite done for. Shakespeare is true to the complexities of characters and events. The retelling of Henry V's reign can't be all about heroic battles and diplomatic triumphs, because that would do violence to a proper understanding of the human beings who made all those things happen. Pistol laments that he has grown old and says, quote unquote, "To England will I steal, and there I'll steal. And patches will I get unto these cudgeled scars, and swear I got them in the Gallia Wars." Act 5, Scene 1, lines 78 through 80. Pistol's statement has a certain eloquence to it, and the pun on steel reinforces the pathos of this unheroic character's future. Henry said everyone who came back from the war in France would be remembered forever. But that hardly rings true for an aging, widowed malcontent like Pistol. With no honorable role to play back home, he's sure to come to an ignominious end. Henry David Thoreau wrote in Walden that, quote unquote, "the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation." Quiet isn't a word we would associate with the voluble and irascible Pistol, but desperation will definitely follow him back to England. It is not be de fashion pour les ladies of France. I cannot tell what is baiser en anglish. Charles VI agrees to terms with the English that make Henry his heir. Henry charms the French princess Catherine of Valois into accepting his marriage proposal. In Act 5, Scene 2, the Duke of Burgundy, Philippe III Le Bon, who reigned from 1419 to 1467, has worked hard to bring the French and English kings together, replacing fighting with binding words, and at last it pays off. Act 5, Scene 2, lines 23 through 28. King Charles VI at first responds with the medieval equivalent of, "My people will get back to your people." But the sum of it is that he must agree to the terms, at least for the present. Act 5, Scene 2, lines 77 through 82. Burgundy figures the torn environment of France as needing nothing more urgently than the residency of peace. Quote unquote, "That naked, poor, and mangled peace, dear nurse of arts, plenties, and joyful births, to recover." Act 5, Scene 2, lines 34 through 35. King Henry says that his marriage to the Princess Catherine of Valois is his, quote-unquote, "capital demand, not simply a request." Act 5, Scene 2, line 96. Even so, he must not omit to play the suitor for the hand of Catherine, and while his French would scarcely earn the proverbial gentleman's C, his performance is not without charm. Henry admits to Catherine, quote unquote, "I know no ways to mince it in love." Act 5, Scene 2, line 123. The princess has some trouble understanding Henry, but what he says is good enough, as he burbles out statements such as, quote unquote, "To say to thee that I shall die is true, but for thy love, by the Lord, no. Yet I love thee too." Act 5, Scene 2, lines 145 through 146. Now how could a lady not fall for that? It's of a piece with Rosalind's remark in Act 4, Scene 1 of As You Like It, that, quote unquote, "men have died from time to time, and worms have eaten them, but not for love." The fifth act is partly focused on the interplay between words and deeds. The former, words, are seldom as efficacious as we wish, while the latter, deeds, are usually more complicated than we like. Words often call for deeds, but deeds usually give way to words, too, if affairs are to come to a satisfactory completion. Catherine has some ideas about which deeds are or are not permitted to a demoiselle of her station. She seems to recognize that, in practical terms, the king's offer of marriage is one that she really can't refuse, But nonetheless, she says, quote unquote, "It is not be de fashion pour les ladies of France. I cannot tell what is baiser en anglais." Act 5, Scene 2, lines 241 through 242. Henry's polite but firm comeback to this coyness on Catherine's part is, quote unquote, "Nice customs curtsy to great kings, dear Kate." Act 5, Scene 2, line 248. It is the fashion for French ladies to kiss before marriage, if he says so. Henry says there is, quote unquote, "witchcraft" in Catherine's lips, more than in all the eloquence of her father's counselors. Act 5, Scene 2, line 254. "Nothing is set in stone. War's violence changes territorial markers, but simple gestures can change frosty fashions. Tradition," says Henry, broadening the royal we to include Catherine. Quote unquote, "We are the makers of manners, Kate, and the liberty that follows our places stops the mouth of all fine faults." Act 5, Scene 2, lines 250 through 252. With the promise of Kate's hand in marriage and Charles VI's agreement to make him heir to the French throne, Henry V has the essential security he needs, and at least for the time being, peace obtains between England and France. King Henry never actually inherited the French throne since he died in 1422, as did the French king Charles VI, only a few months after Henry. Small time, but in that small, most greatly lived this star of England. The chorus reminds us that King Henry V died young, leaving the English throne to his infant son, who, as Henry VI, would go on to lose the French possessions that his father had won. The epilogue pays tribute to Henry VI's chivalric heroism, saying, quote unquote, "Small time, but in that small, most greatly lived this star of England." Epilogue, lines 5 through 6. The speaker also makes brief but significant reference to the painful historical fact that what Henry V won, his son, Henry VI, lost during a tumultuous reign that drove England into the dark period known as the Wars of the Roses, ending only with Henry Tudor's putting down of the Yorkist king, Richard III, at Bosworth Field on August 22, 1485. When the dust settled in 1453 from what we call the Hundred Years' War, France, and not England, emerged the winner. Thanks for listening. This audio lecture was recorded on Wednesday, November 5th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition 4-volume genre-based format.